Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where we are slowly but surely working our way through the story of the Stormlight Archive and a few of the wider scale Cosmere stories. We are currently working our way through Words of Radiance. We're on part three. This is our second episode in part three. And things are going well. This to me is the... Well, this is the longest part of the book, like just by page count. But also it's kind of the longest part that it took me to read. Probably the whole series of all four books that are out so far. So last week, would you like to attempt or do you want me to just kind of remind you? Yeah, okay. So last week we had four interlude chapters, three different POVs. We had Azahel interlude where just he agreed to train Kaladin, and also he made the reference that he has not heard Nightblood in quite a while, in years at least.
Well, he didn't specify Nightblood, but...
No, but that's what he's saying. We had a Taln interlude where Taln has arrived at the Shattered Plains and he is absolutely nuts, if that wasn't clear from the end of the first book. It should be now. He pretty much was just listening to Elikar and Dalinar talk, and Dalinar said that he had a plan for Taln's Shardblade. We had two Eshrenai chapters where pretty much she was corrupted by this red spren that her sister gave her, and instead of becoming, I think art form was what they were looking for, she became storm form. And she went back to the listeners and started to, like, rile them up to fight the Alethi and to all transform to storm form and summon a great storm to wipe out the Alethi. Yeah, not great for Eshrenai.
No.
Then we started part three, and pretty much part three was just what we covered was Shallan arriving on the Shattered Plains. She is housing herself with High Prince Sabariel, who is a kind of crotchety old man who's funny. And she's like, all right, this puts me around influential people, but not with somebody who's going to watch me too closely. And she started flirting with Adolin, and Kaladin doesn't like her, and she doesn't really like Kaladin. And we had one flashback chapter where one of the High Prince's sons showed up at the Devar estate and was like, hey, if any of you guys want to tell me that your dad killed your mom, it's going to be real good for you. We're going to kill that fucker and you'll be super cool. But nobody went for it. And that's pretty much all that happened last time. This week, we're starting with chapter 41. God, we're already on chapter 41. It has Kaladin's symbol, and the epigraph reads, "This act of great villainy went beyond the impudence which had hitherto been ascribed to the orders. As the fighting was particularly intense at this time, many attributed this attack to a sense of inherent betrayal, and after they withdrew, about 2,000 made assault upon them, destroying much of the membership. But this was only 9 of the 10, as one said they would not abandon their arms and flee, but instead entertained great subterfuge at the expense of the other 9. From Words of Radiance, chapter 38, page 20. So this epigraph in particular, it sounds, is referring to the events of the Recreants as how Dalinar saw it last book, where he saw all these Radiants approach this keep and then lay down their shards and walk away. And a bunch of people attacked and slaughtered them. And this epigraph says that was 9 of the 10 orders of Radiance, but that one did not lay down their arms.
Oh.
That one, at great subterfuge, did not abandon their arms and flee like the other 9 did. And it was at the expense of the other 9.
You mean the other one?
I think it was at the... I mean that, like... the expense of the other 9 in terms of, like, everybody else got fucked up and they didn't because they fled. This chapter starts. Kaladin is giving orders for Teft to train Bridge 17 in the Chasms. There are 37 days remaining before the mysterious glyph countdown reaches 0. Syl asks him what drives him, and he says it is to keep his men alive, but she doesn't buy that. She calls bullshit. He says that his new goal is to kill the assassin. He blames the death of Tien on Zeth killing Gavilar. He's like, if Zeth hadn't killed Gavilar, then the war wouldn't have happened, and we wouldn't have had, like, Amaram wouldn't have had as much power as he did while all the other high princes are away. So really, Tien's death is on Zeth. And Syl is like, that is reaching very far. And he's like, all right, well, the assassin deserves to die regardless whether he's directly responsible for the death of Tien or not. Kaladin encounters Sigzil, who is speculating with Rock and Lopin about Zeth's motivations and true employer. They're like, do you think he's employed by the Parshendi still? Kaladin tries to duplicate Zeth's feat of walking on walls, but fails. Sigzil wishes he could see Syl, and she appears to him. Kaladin asks both Syl and Sigzil about Windrunners, but neither is able to give any information. Sigzil, Rock, and Lopin discuss the attempt to make Elokar fall off his balcony, and for a moment, Kaladin thinks he can see Shadesmar. He doesn't obviously say that he sees Shadesmar, but he describes it. And then he made the direction of the wall become down. He fell forward into the wall. He scrambled to his feet and found himself standing on the wall. He backed up a few paces, walking up the side of the chasm. To him, that wall was the floor, and the other three bridgemen stood on the actual floor, which looked like the wall. This, Kaladin thought, is going to get confusing. Wow, Lopin said. Yeah, this is really going to be fun. Run up that wall, Gancho! Kaladin hesitated, then turned and started running. Syl streaked out in front of him, zipping out of the chasm. She turned about a ribbon of light. Come on, she called to him. Out, onto the plateau, into the sunlight. There are scouts out there, he said, watching for gem hearts. Come out anyway. Stop hiding, Kaladin. Be. Lopin and Rock whooped below in excitement. Kaladin stared outward at the blue sky. I have to know, he whispered. No? You ask me why I protect Dalinar. I have to know if he really is what he seems, Syl. I have to know if one of them lives up to his reputation. That will tell me. Tell you? Tell you what? If honor is dead, Kaladin whispered. He is, Syl said, but he lives on in men, and in me. Kaladin frowned. Dalinar Kholin is a good man. He is friends with Amaram. He could be the same inside. You don't believe that. I have to know, Syl, he said. He tried to take her arm, but she was too insubstantial. His hand passed through. I can't just believe it. I need to know it. You asked what I want. Well, that's it. I want to know if I can trust Dalinar. And if I can? If I can, I'll tell him what I can do. I will believe that at least one Light Eyes won't try to take everything from me, like Roshon did, like Amaram did, like Sadeas did. And that is what it will take? I warned you that I was broken, Syl. No, you've been reforged. It can happen to men. To other men, yes. I'm not certain about myself yet, but I will protect Dalinar Kholin with everything I have. I will learn who he is, who he really is. Then maybe we'll give him his Knight's Radiant. And Amaram? What of him? Him? I'm going to kill. Kaladin, don't let this destroy you. It can't, he said, Stormlight running out. His uniform coat began to fall backward toward the ground, as did his hair. Amaram already took care of that. The ground below fully reasserted itself, and Kaladin fell backward away from her. He sucked in Stormlight, twisting in the air as his veins flared back to life. He landed feet first in a rush of power and light. The other three remained silent as he stood up straight. That, Rock said, was a very fast way to get down. Ha! But it did not include falling on face, which would be fun. So you get only soft clap. He proceeded to clap. It was indeed soft. Lopin, however, cheered, and Sigzil nodded with a wide grin. Kaladin and the others return to their barracks and find a tense dinner gathering. Kaladin stepped into the light and found a man sitting there, head bowed. Renarin Kholin. Brightlord, Kaladin said. Is there something you need? Renarin scrambled to his feet and saluted. I would like to serve under your command, sir. Inside, Kaladin groaned. Let's talk away from the fire, Brightlord. Sir, Renarin said. I want... You shouldn't call me sir, Kaladin whispered. You're light-eyed. Storms. You're the son of the most powerful man in Eastern Roshar. I want to be in Bridge 4, Renarin said. Kaladin rubbed his forehead. You can't be in Bridge 4. We're bodyguards for your own family. What are you going to do, guard yourself? I won't be a liability, sir. I'll work hard. I don't doubt you would, Renarin. Look, why do you want to be in Bridge 4? My father and my brother. They're warriors. Soldiers. I'm not, if you haven't noticed. Yes, something about physical ailments. I have a blood weakness. That's a folk description of many different conditions. What do you really have? I'm epileptic. It means... And I'm not going to go into this whole thing, but Kaladin just proceeds to diagnose Renarin's epilepsy in great detail. And the younger man's like, what the fuck? He's like, how do you know about epilepsy? How do you know these things? Aren't you a soldier? I know some field medicine. Field medicine for epilepsy? Well, I can see why they didn't want you going into battle. I've seen men with wounds that cause similar symptoms, and the surgeons always dismiss those men from duty. It's no shame to not be fit enough for battle, Bright Lord. Not every man is needed for fighting. Sure, Renarin said bitterly. Everyone tells me that. Then they all go back to fighting. The Ardents, they claim every calling is important, but then what do they teach about the afterlife? That it's a big war to reclaim the Tranquiline Halls, that the best soldiers in this life are glorified in the next. If the afterlife really is a big war, then I hope I end up in damnation. At least there I might be able to get a wink or two of sleep. Regardless, you're no soldier. I want to be. Bright Lord, you don't have to set me to doing anything important. I came to you instead of one of the other battalions because most of your men spend their time patrolling. If I'm patrolling, I won't be in much danger, and my fits won't hurt anyone. But at least I can see. I can feel what it's like. He rushed on. Kaladin had never heard so many words from the normally quiet young man. I will obey your commands. Treat me like a new recruit. When I'm here, I'm not a prince's son. I'm not a Light Eyes. I'm just another soldier. Please, I want to be part of it. Renarin tells Kaladin about how Adolin had been in a spearman squad for a few months when he was younger, that Dalinar had made him see how soldiers lived. Kaladin sighed. You really want to be a soldier? Yes, sir. Go take those dirty stew bottles and wash them, or bowls and wash them. Then help Rock clean his cauldron and put away the cooking implements. Yes, sir, Renarin said. Renarin jogged over and began happily snatching up bowls. Moash expresses doubt, but Kaladin says that Renarin is different from most Light Eyes and could fit in with them. Kaladin ponders how to confront Moash over suspicion of him helping to assassinate Elikar. Moash approaches and suggests that Kaladin duels with Amaram to get revenge, saying that any problem Kaladin has is a problem for all of Bridge 4. Moash gave a little half-smile. I have some Voidbringers in my past, too. Maybe that's why I understand you. Maybe that's why you understand me. Then what? I don't really want to talk about it. We're Bridge 4, like you said. Your problems are mine. Suppose that's true, Moash said, turning away. Not tonight. Tonight, I just want to relax. Moash and a few bridgemen leave to go drinking and invite Kaladin, but he declines and stays to eat dinner. And that is the end of the first chapter that we're covering. Renarin is joining Bridge 4!
And kind of.
Kind of. Next chapter, chapter 42, Mere Vapors. It has Shallan's symbol, and the epigraph reads, But as for Ishi-Ilin, his was the part most important at their inception. He readily understood the implications of surges being granted to men, and caused organization to be thrust upon them. As having too great power, he let it be known that he would destroy each and every one unless they agreed to be bound by precepts and laws. From Words of Radiance, chapter 2, page 4. So Ishi-Ilin is another name for the herald Ishar. And so this is saying that Ishar, pretty much once the Radiance started to appear, forced them to organize and become the Knights Radiant and not just people with surge binding. Shallan wakes up in her new quarters in the evening. Shallan opens her trunk and finds the span reed blinking an alert light and sets it up to receive messages. Shallan reads Tin's old correspondence regarding Yasna, House Tavar, and the Ghostbloods. Pattern points out a code that he detects in the messages. Shallan frets that she will not be able to infiltrate the Ghostbloods, but then uses her sketching ability and light weaving to create an illusionary disguise for herself. Shallan receives a message on the span reed that indicates the Ghostbloods want to meet with Tin that evening, but Shallan says that she is not well and that she will send an apprentice in Tin's place. The intermediary eventually replies that the Ghostbloods will meet the apprentice and gives a map and time for the meeting. Shallan puts on Tin's clothing, Bluth's hat, and a dark eyes disguise and leaves to go to the rendezvous. And that's the end of that chapter. Chapter 43 is titled The Ghostbloods, and it has Shallan's symbol. The epigraph reads, And thus were the disturbances in the Rev Toparchy quieted when upon their ceasing to prosecute their civil dissensions, Nalan-Ilin betook himself to finally accept the Skybreakers who had named him their master, when initially he had spurned their advances, and in his own interest refused to countenance that which he deemed a pursuit of vanity and annoyance. This was the last of heralds to admit to such patronage. From Words of Radiance, chapter 5, page 17. So, Nail, or Nalan-Ilin, was the last herald to accept that one of the orders was, like, basing themselves off of him. And accept them as his kind of, or accept himself as their patron. Mm-hmm. Shallan walks to the meeting using her map as a guide. Shallan tells Pattern to follow her and try to see if anyone tries to trail her, and Pattern reports that no one is tailing her. She reaches the destination, which is a tenement building, and is admitted by a Horneater guard. The guard points her to a staircase leading down, and she finds another room with a trapdoor and takes a ladder down further and ends up in a carpeted trophy room with several people. A man points a blowgun past her and shoots a dart at a target right behind her. "Tin," the man said, "is unwell?" "Yes," Shallan said. "She does not seem the type to let something so trivial keep her from an important meeting." "You are right. Tin is well. However, the plan did not go as she promised. Yasna Kolin is dead, but the implementation of the assassination was sloppy. Tin felt it prudent to work through an intermediary for now." The man narrowed his eyes. "She reveals herself as a coward. You came here willingly, knowing that I might just kill you for your mistakes." "Every woman starts somewhere, Bright Lord," Shallan said. "I can't claw my way upward without taking a few chances. If you don't kill me, then I have had a chance to meet with people that Tin probably would have never introduced me to." "Bold," the man said. "Tell me where she is, and you may have money. You have ambition. I like that. I will not only pay you for her location, but will attempt to find you a position in my organization." "Pardon, Bright Lord," Shallan said. "If I were willing to betray Tin for a price, then of what worth would I ever be to you? You'd know that I'd do the same to you if honored a big enough bounty." "Honor?" the man asked. "From a thief?" "Pardon again, Bright Lord, but I am no mere thief. And if I were to torture you? I could get the information that way, I assure you." "I don't doubt that you could, Bright Lord, but do you really think Tin would send me with knowledge of her location? What would be the point of torturing me?" "Well," the man said, "for one thing, it would be fun." "I don't think you'll do that, Bright Lord." "And why not?" "Because you don't seem the type to throw away something useful." She nodded toward the relics and glass boxes. "You presume to be of use to me?" Shallan raised her head, meeting his gaze. "Yes." He held her eyes. "Very well," he finally said. The tall man who had questioned her did not speak for a while. "Bright Lord," Shallan said, looking toward him. "I am considering. I had been expecting to kill you and hunt down Tin. You can tell her she would have been fine coming to me. I am not angry that she did not retrieve the information from Yasna. I hired the hunter I felt best for the task, and I understood the risks. Kolin is dead, and Tin was to achieve that at all other costs. I may not have commended her on the job, but I was satisfied. Deciding not to come explain in person, however, that cowardice turns my stomach. She hides, like prey." He took a sip of his wine. "You are not a coward. She sent someone she knew I would not kill. She always has been clever." Shallan took the chance to inspect the room in greater detail. The right wall had the greatest number of trophies, lots of trophies from animals native to Roshar. Other curiosities baffled her. A vial of pale sand, a couple of thick hairpins, a lock of golden hair, the branch of a tree with writing on it she couldn't read, a silver knife, an odd flower preserved in some kind of solution. There were no plaques to explain these mementos. That chunk of pale pink crystal looked like it might be some kind of gemstone. But why was it so delicate? Bits of it had flaked off in its case, as if simply setting it down had almost crushed it. "So I can't explain all of these items, but I can give you a few of them. He has a vial of pale sand, which is from the world Tal'Dane, which is the setting of the comic book White Sand. I'm presuming that the lock of golden hair is one of the royal locks from Nalthus or Warbreaker. The silver knife is from the planet Threnody, which is the setting of the short story Shadows for Silence in the Forests of Hell. And the odd flower that he has is probably one of the Tears of Edgley, which is one of the flowers in Warbreaker."
"Oh. This doesn't seem like a wit character, though, so who is he?"
"You're about to find out his name. Do you know the man named Amaram?" asked the scarred man in white. Oh, he's wearing white, by the way. "No, Bright Lord. I am called Marais," the man said. "You may use that title for me. And you are?" "I'm called Vale," Shallan said. "Very well. Amaram is a shardbearer in the court of High Prince Sadius. He is also my current prey. And what do you wish of me, Marais?" "He owns a manor near Sadius's palace. Inside, Amaram hides secrets. I would know which ones. Tell your mistress to investigate and return to me with information next week on T'Challe. She will know what I seek. If she does this, my disappointment with her will fade." "The task will be done," Shallan said to Marais. "No question of payment?" Marais asked, amused. "Your mistress always asked. Bright Lord, one does not haggle at the finest winehouses. Your payment will be accepted." For the first time since she'd entered, she saw Marais smile. "Do not harm Amaram, little knife," he warned. "His life belongs to another. Do not alert anyone or bring suspicion. Tin is to investigate and return. Nothing more." Shallan is dismissed. After Shallan leaves the building, Pattern warns her that the masked woman, there's a masked woman among the crowd, and that that masked woman is tailing her. She draws a sketch and creates an illusionary wall to hide from her pursuer. Shallan's disguise vanishes as her stormlight runs out, and she ditches her coat and hat and returns to the manor, feeling excited over her adventure. Shallan makes plans to investigate Amaram and interact with Adolin. And that is the end of the chapter, and the end of Shallan's first meeting with the leader of the Ghostbloods. A lot of people have a really big villain crush on Moraes. I think he's okay. He's whatever.
Is he supposed to be attractive?
I don't think he's supposed to be attractive, but he's just kind of got the, like, exotic and weird, and people like that for some reason. He goes around in a white, like, outfit.
Kind of like some other serial killer we know.
Yeah. Which is funny that you mentioned the Wit thing, because I think it's interesting because Wit goes around in a black outfit. So I think it's interesting how that's kind of juxtaposed a little bit. The next chapter is chapter 44, One Form of Justice. It has Kaladin symbol. The epigraph reads, "But as for the Bondsmiths, they had members only three, which number was not uncommon for them. Nor did they seek to increase this by great bounds. For during the times of Madassa, only one of their order was in continual accompaniment of Yur-Thiru and its thrones. Their spren was understood to be specific, and to persuade them to grow to the magnitude of the other orders was seen as seditious." From Words of Radiance, chapter 16, page 14.
Can you turn that into English, please?
There was an order known as the Bondsmiths. There were only ever three of them at the most. And if anybody was like, "You guys should have more," it was like, that's not a thing that can happen or will happen ever.
They're not the ones that were doing research on Spren, were they?
No. You'll understand why there were only ever three by the end of this book. Well, not exactly why there were only three specifically, but why there couldn't be a ton of them. So, Kaladin arrives at the Light Eyes training grounds and asks Zahel to train him, Moash, Teft, and Yake. Zahel gives instruction to Renarin, then brings one of the king's shard blades for the bridgemen to practice with. Moash, Teft, and Yake practice with the shard blade, but Kaladin declines, remembering his friend dying to one. Kaladin tells Zahel to swing the blade at him without a guard so that he can have practice facing one. Syl thanks Kaladin for not using the blade. As Kaladin is dodging Zahel's swings, he meets Adolin's eyes, who gives him a nod of respect. After the practice, Kaladin gets some water and glances around the training grounds, spotting Shallan. "Not bad," Yake said, following Kaladin's gaze. "Not bad at what?" Kaladin asked. "Not bad looking, Captain. Storms. Sometimes it seems like the only thing you think about is who has to be on duty next." Nearby, Syl nodded emphatically. "She's light-eyed," Kaladin said. "So, a light-eyed lady can't be attractive?" "No. You are a strange one, sir." Yake jogged back, but Teft lingered for a moment. "You think we have to worry about her? Foreign woman about whom we know very little, sent in to suddenly be Adolin's betrothed? Sure would make a good assassin." "Damnation," Kaladin said. "I should have seen that. Good eye, Teft." Teft shrugged modestly, then jogged back to his training. As Kaladin walked towards Shallan, Adolin clanked up beside him in shardplate. "What is she doing here?" Kaladin asked. "Come to watch me while I spar, presumably," Adolin said. "I usually have to kick them out." "Them? You know, girls who want to gawk at me while I fight. I wouldn't mind, but if we allowed it, they'd clog the entire grounds every time I came. Nobody would be able to get any sparring done." Kaladin raised an eyebrow at him. "What? You don't get women coming to watch while you spar, bridge boy? Little dark-eyed ladies missing seven teeth and afraid of bathing?" "Next time," Kaladin thought, "I let the assassin have this one." Adolin chuckled for a moment, though his laughter trailed off awkwardly. "Anyways, she probably has a better reason to be here than others, considering our relationship. We'll still have to kick her out. Can't set a bad precedent." "You really let this happen?" Kaladin asked. "A betrothal to a woman you'd never met?" Adolin shrugged armored shoulders. "Things always go so well at first, and then they fall apart on me. I can never figure out where I go wrong. I thought maybe if there were something more formal in place..." Adolin reached Shallan, who, humming to herself, passed him right by without looking. Adolin raised a hand, mouth open to speak, as he turned and watched her walk farther across the courtyard. Adolin scowled, turning to jog after Shallan, passing Kaladin, who smirked at him. "Come to watch you, I see," Kaladin said, completely fascinated by you, obviously. "Shut up," Adolin growled. Shallan asked permission to sketch the shard plate and shard blades for the royal record and receives it from Nahl. "Look," Adolin said, turning to Shallan, "I can see what you're up to." 5'6", Shallan said. I suspect that's all I will ever be up to, unfortunately. 5 foot. Yes, I thought it was a good height, then I came here. You, Alethi, really are freakishly tall, aren't you? I'd guess everyone here is a good 2 inches taller than the Vaden average. No, that's not... You're here because you want to watch me spar. Admit it. The sketching is a ruse. Someone has a high opinion of himself. Comes with being royalty, I suppose. Like funny hats and a fondness for beheadings. Ah, and it's our captain of the guard. Your boots are on the way to your barracks via courier. Is that so? I had the soles replaced. They were terribly uncomfortable. I liked how they fit. Then you must have stones for feet. Wait, Adolin said. You wore the bridge boy's boots? How did that happen? Awkwardly, Shallan replied, and with 3 pairs of socks. She patted Adolin's armored arm. If you really want me to sketch you, Adolin, I will. No need to act jealous, though I do still want that walk you promised me. Oh, I need to get that. Excuse me. Kaladin inspected her, wondering just how far she could be trusted. Probably not far. Insufferable woman, Adolin growled. He glanced at Kaladin. Stop leering at her backside, bridge boy. I'm not leering. And what do you care? You just said she was insufferable. Yeah, Adolin said, looking back toward her with a wide grin. She all but ignored me, didn't she? I suppose. Insufferable, Adolin said. His smile widened and he strode after her. Kaladin shook his head, light eyes in their games. Kaladin rejoins Moash and the others, but watches Adolin, Renarin, and Shallan from a distance. It was the king, Moash said. He had my family executed. And Kaladin's like, what the fuck did you just say to me? We're Bridge 4, Moash continued. We stick together. You should know about why I am the way I am. My grandparents were the only family I ever knew. Parents died when I was a child. Anna and Da, they raised me. The king, he killed them. How did it happen? Kaladin asked softly. I was away, working a caravan that ran out here to this wasteland. Anna and Da, they were second none, important for Dark Eyes, you know? Ran their own shop, silversmiths. I never picked up on the trade. Liked to be out walking, going somewhere. Well, a light-eyed man owned 2 or 3 silversmith shops in Kolinar, one of which was across from my grandparents. He never did like the competition. This was a year or so before the old king died, and Elokar was left in charge of the kingdom while Gavilar was out at the plains. Anyway, Elokar was good friends with the Light Eyes, who was in competition with my grandparents. So he did his friend a favor. Elokar had Anna and Dog dragged in on some charge or another. They were important enough to demand a right to trial, an inquest before magistrates. I think it surprised Elokar that he couldn't completely ignore the law. He pled lack of time and sent Anna and Da to the dungeons to wait until an inquest could be arranged. They died there a few months later, still waiting for Elokar to approve their paperwork. That's not exactly the same as killing them. Moash met Kaladin's eyes. You doubt that sending a 75-year-old couple to the palace dungeons is a death sentence? I guess you're right. Moash nodded sharply. Elokar knew they'd die in there. That way, the hearing would never go before the magistrates, exposing his corruption. That bastard killed them, murdered them to keep his secret. I came home from my trip with the caravan to an empty house, and the neighbors told me my family was already 2 months dead. So now you're trying to assassinate King Elokar. Moash froze, looking him in the eye. That night on the balcony, did you make it look like a shard blade cut the railing? Moash took him by the arm in a tight grip, looking about. We shouldn't talk about this here. Stormfather, Moash, we've been hired to protect the man. Our job is to keep Dalinar alive. I can agree with that. He doesn't seem too bad for a Light Eyes. Storms, this kingdom would be a lot better off if he were king instead. Don't tell me you think differently. But killing the king? Not here. I can't just let it go. Nilan's hand. I'm going to have to tell... You do that? Moash demanded. You turn on a member of Bridge 4? They locked gazes. Kaladin turned away. Damnation. No, I won't. At least not if you'll agree to stop. You may have a grudge with the king, but you can't just try to... You know. And what else am I supposed to do? What kind of justice can a man like me get on a king, Kaladin? Tell me. I'll stop for now. If you'll agree to meet with someone. Who? Kaladin asked. This plan wasn't my idea. Some others are involved. All I had to do was throw them a rope. I want you to listen to them. Moash. Listen to what they have to say. Just listen, Cal. That's all. If you don't agree with what they tell you, I'll back out. Please. You promise not to do anything else against the king until we've had this meeting? On my grandparents' honor. Kaladin sighed, but nodded. All right. Moash relaxed visibly. Kaladin sighed and came face to face with Syl hovering behind him. Her tiny eyes had gone wide, hands as fists to her side. What did you just do? She demanded. I only heard the last part. Moash was involved, Kaladin whispered. I need to follow this through, Syl. If someone is trying to kill the king, it's my job to investigate them. Oh, she frowned. I felt something. Something else. She shook her head. Kaladin, this is dangerous. We should go to Dalinar. I promised Moash, he said. I can't go to Dalinar until I know more. Kaladin practices with a fake shard blade. Still, he said, you're honest, Bren. Does that mean you can tell me the right thing to do? Definitely. Is it wrong for Moash to try to kill the king? Of course. Why? Because killing is wrong. And the Parshendi I killed? We've talked about this. It had to be done. And what if one of them was a Surgebinder, with his own honor spren? Parshendi can't become Surgebind, just pretend. I'd guess all the Parshendi want to do at this point is survive. Storms, the ones involved in Gavilar's death, they might not even still be alive. Their leaders were executed back in Alethkar, after all. So you tell me, if a common Parshendi who is protecting his people comes up against me, what would his honor spren say? That he's doing the right thing? I still hunched down. She hated questions like this. It doesn't matter. You said you won't kill the Parshendi anymore. And Amaram, can I kill him? Is that justice? One form. There's a difference. What? Because of what it does to you. Thinking about him changes you, twists you. You're supposed to protect Kaladin, not kill. You have to kill to protect, he snapped. Storms, you're starting to sound as bad as my father. Kaladin asks to learn the last clap maneuver from Zahel, which is what Dalinar did when he just fucking clapped his hands together and cost Zeth's shard blade. But Zahel says he won't be useful to learn, and the Swordmaster seems happy that Kaladin just kind of accepts that it's not going to be that much use. These are sketches by Shallan of Shard Plate and Shard Blades. Mm-hmm. There's Firestorm, which is the blade of King Gavilar on the left, and on the bottom right is Sunraiser, the blade of King Elakar.
What about bottom left?
I think bottom left is Oathbringer, I think. I think that's Dalinar's or Dalinar's old one. And I think the one on the bottom right might be Amaram's shard blade.
You already said bottom right.
Sorry, I meant middle right. Sorry. Kind of like, I guess, top right, whatever. Top left is Gavilar's, top right is Elakar's, bottom left is, I think that's Oathbringer, I think that's Nausadius's, and bottom right is Amaram's, I believe. And I do love that Shallan did a little sketch of Adolin there and just wrote sigh underneath.
Why does his helmet look like it has tiny little cat ears?
Because this is an anime and Sanderson doesn't realize it.
Just turn it into an anime, Sanderson.
I think it's probably going to end up being one.
Do it.
Yeah, I think that's Amaram's. Because Amaram's, the one Amaram got is described as having like almost a flame-like appearance towards the hilt. And that kind of looks like a flame to me down there. All right. Our last chapter for this week is chapter 45, Middle Fest. It has Shallan's flashback symbol, and it was 3.5 years ago. Shallan and her family are attending the Middlefest Fair on her father's estates, which draws people from hamlets and villages all around. She follows her father to their box at the dueling arena, where they are soon approached by Bright Lord Revelar. Eventually, her father bows his head, and they send Shallan away. She is excited to see the fair unchaperoned, but forces herself to do work first. After finding Elida Tavenar, who gives her a note, she sets off to find her brother Balat. While searching, she thinks of her mother, and her mind goes blank. Balat is at the Axehound fights in the gambling pavilion, watching intensely, fixated on the animals killing each other. Shallan gives him the note, and he's surprised and excited by the meeting she's arranged. When she returns to her father's box, he's in a meeting with the man she doesn't recognize. The man, dressed in black, seemed startled when he sees Shallan and almost drops his glass. She caught, with a subtle movement, the man slipping something from his coat pocket and moving it up toward the drinks. The newcomer covertly dumped the pouch's contents into his own drink, then raised it to his lips, gulping down the powder. What had it been? Melise tells her that the man claims to have brought word from her brother, Helleran. When asked what news the man brought, her father commands her not to speak Helleran's name and declares him disinherited. Shallan leaves and seeks out their carriage. Wickham is within, depressed and despondent. He asks whether their father sent her or whether she came on one of her new little missions of mercy. He tells her that she can't fix their family and that he won't be around to see their collapse because he'll be dead by then. Feeling like a fool, she gives him the gift she had prepared, a set of math problems, then hastens away from the carriage, fighting back tears. Shallan sat on a rock, trying to compose herself. "Axehound," a voice said from behind her. Shallan jumped and spun. He rested up on a tree limb, wearing his black outfit. It was the messenger who had spoken to Father earlier. I have wondered if any of you find the term odd. You know what an axe is, but what is a hound? Why does that matter, Shallan asked. Because it is a word. A simple word with a world embedded inside, like a bud waiting to open. I did not expect to find you here. Where did you expect to find me? At the dueling grounds? The man swung around the branch and dropped to the ground. Shallan stepped backward. No need for that, the man said, settling onto a rock. You needn't fear me. I'm terribly ineffective at hurting people. I blame my upbringing. You have news of my brother Helleran? The messenger nodded. He is a very determined young man. Where is he? Doing things he finds very important. I would fault him for it, as I find nothing more frightening than a man trying to do what he has decided is important. Very little in the world has ever gone astray, at least on a grand scale, because a person decided to be frivolous. He is well, though? Well enough. The message for your father was that he has eyes nearby, and is watching. Where is he? Did he tell you to speak to me? I am sorry, young one. The man said, expression softening. He gave me only that brief message for your father, and that only because I mentioned I would be traveling this direction. Oh, I assumed he'd sent you here. I mean, that coming to us was your primary purpose. Turns out that it was. Tell me, young one, do Spren speak to you? The lights going out, life drained from them, twisted symbols the eye could not see, her mother's soul in a box. She said, no, why would a Spren speak to me? No voices, the man said, leaning forward. Do spheres go dark when you are near? I'm sorry, Shallan said, but I should be getting back to my father. He will be missing me. Your father is slowly destroying your family. Your brother was right on that count. He was wrong about everything else. Such as? Look. The man nodded back toward the carriages. Inside, Wickham leaned forward and scribbled at the mathematical problems she'd left. He was smiling. The messenger whispered. Two blind men waited at the end of an era, contemplating beauty. They sat atop the world's highest cliff, overlooking the land and seeing nothing. Huh? Can beauty be taken from a man? The first asked the second. It was taken from me, the second replied, for I cannot remember it. This man was blinded in a childhood accident. I pray to the god beyond each night to restore my sight, so that I may find beauty again. Is beauty something one must see, then? The first asked. Of course, that is its nature. How can you appreciate a work of art without seeing it? I can hear a work of music, the first said. Very well, you can hear some kinds of beauty, but you cannot know full beauty without sight. You can know only a small portion of beauty. A sculpture, that first person said. Can I not feel its curves and slopes, the touch of the chisel that transformed common rock into uncommon wonder? I suppose, said the second, that you can know the beauty of a sculpture. And what of the beauty of food? Is it not a work of art when a chef crafts a masterpiece to delight the tastes? I suppose, said the second, that you can know the beauty of a chef's art. And what of the beauty of a woman, the first said? Can I not know her beauty in the softness of her caress, the kindness of her voice, the keenness of her mind as she reads philosophy to me? Can I not know this beauty? Can I not know most kinds of beauty, even without my eyes? Very well, said the second, but what if your ears were removed, your hearing taken away, your tongue taken out, your mouth forced shut, your sense of smell destroyed? What if your skin were burned so that you could no longer feel? What if all that remained to you was pain? You could not know beauty then. It can be taken from a man. The messenger stopped, cocking his head at Shallan. What, she asked. What think you? Can beauty be taken from a man? If he could not touch, taste, smell, hear, see, what if all he knew was pain? Has that man had beauty taken from him? Does the pain change day by day? Let us say that it does. Then beauty to that person would be the times when the pain lessens. Why are you telling me this story? The messenger smiled. To be human is to seek beauty, Shallan. Do not despair. Do not hunt. End the hunt because thorns grow in your way. Tell me, what is the most beautiful thing you can imagine? Father is probably wondering where I am. Indulge me. I will tell you where your brother is. A wonderful painting, then. That is the most beautiful thing. Lies. Tell me the truth. What is it, child? Beauty to you. What was it? Mother still lives, she found herself whispering, meeting his eyes. And? And we are in the gardens. And she is speaking to my father, and he is laughing and holding her. We were all there, including Helleran. He never left. The people my mother knew, Dritter, never came to our home. Mother loves me. She teaches me philosophy, and she shows me how to draw. Good. But you can do better than that. What is that place? What does it feel like? It's spring, and the moss vines bloom a vigorous red. They smell sweet, and the air is moist from the morning's high storm. Mother whispers, but there is music to her tone, and father's laugh does an echo. It rises high into the air, bathing us all. Helleran is teaching Jushu swords, and they spar nearby. Wickham laughs as Helleran is struck on the side of the leg. He is studying to be an ardent, as mother wanted. I am sketching them all, charcoal scratching paper. I feel warm despite the slight chill to the air. I have a steaming cup of cider beside me, and I taste the sweetness in my mouth from the sip I just took. It is beautiful because it could have been. It should have been. She blinked tears. She saw it. She heard her mother's voice, saw Jushu giving up spheres to Balat as he lost the duel, but laughing as he paid, uncaring of the loss. She could feel the air, smell the scents, hear the sounds of songlings in the brush. Almost, it became real. Wisps of light rose before her. The messenger had gotten out a handful of spheres and held them toward her while staring into her eyes. The steamy stormlight rose between them. Shallan lifted her fingers, the image of her ideal life wrapped around her like a comforter. No. She drew back, the misty light faded. I see. You do not yet understand the nature of lies. I had that trouble myself long ago. The shards here are very strict. You will have to see the truth, child, before you can expand upon it, just as a man should know the law before he breaks it. Could you help? No, not now. You aren't ready, for one, and I have work to be about. Another day. Keep cutting at those thorns, strong one, and make a path for the light. The things you fight aren't completely natural. He stood up, then bowed to her. My brother, she said, he is in Alethkar. Why? Because that is where he feels he is needed, of course. If I see him again, I will give him word of you. The messenger walked away on light feet. Shallan watched him go, the deep things within her settling again, returning to the forgotten parts of her mind. She realized she had not even asked the man his name. And that is the end of the chapter and where we will stop for tonight.
Bye, Hoyd.
Bye, Hoyd. Little interesting thing there. Shallan was doing some stuff there, huh? And Hoyd was also doing some stuff, although much more subtly.
He was planting seeds.
Beyond that, he was doing something very subtly. She seemed real eager to not talk to him. And yet, she kept talking to him. He kept pulling her back in. And he dumped something in his drink earlier in the chapter.
You said it was silvery, right?
It's powdery, is what it says.
I thought it said silvery powder.
I think it just says powder, is what I have. But I can tell you, he is using allomancy on her. He is burning zinc, I think, is the one that lets you mess with other people.
Is it?
Other people's emotions? I think it's zinc. Well, zinc is
soothing emotions. I don't know, I read like
five chapters. Yeah, zinc is soothing emotions, and I think that's what he's doing to her, is he's soothing her distrust of him and making her want to answer his questions. But he is confirmed to be influencing her with allomancy during that scene. So, yes.
Is that why he's such a smooth talker? Because he just burns metals all the time.
I would presume that he's doing it quite frequently. I don't know that he's doing it constantly.
It makes sense that he always manages to get people to tell him what he wants.
Yeah.
And that would explain it.
And he seemed very interested in Shallan.
Yeah. Possibly because of her power. Possibly because of the fact that her power seems to be different from other people.
Her power is interesting. Because, I'm not going to point it out, actually. It's interesting. There's something about what's happening in this chapter that is interesting if you think of the timeline.
What do you mean, think of the timeline?
She has not yet met, or at least... She has not yet, it seems, met, or at least if the way the Way of Kings depicts events, she has not yet met the Spren that she would eventually bond. She hasn't met Pattern.
Yeah.
Now, the Way of Kings did say that she remembered seeing cryptics as a child.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely seems like, in this chapter at least, she's pretty close to being able to use Stormlight, because that's what Hoyt is trying to get her to do by having her describe this scenery, is to do that illusion stuff that we see her doing in this book.
Yeah, trying but to make also her create she that had scene. A also she killed her father like right before she left.
Yes,
the country, didn't she? Or not like right before?
We don't know the timeline
soon
yet.
Before,
but yeah, it's recent.
And she wasn't conscious enough with any sort of spren around her to the point where she could have consciously bonded with one, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is what it seems right now.
Which means that that's also not... Which means she got her... Actually, obviously, you can get a shard blade without bonding with a spren, but...
I would say almost every single person in the world has a shard blade without a spren except for Shalon right now.
Yeah. So I guess that's totally separate. But she had her power before she bonded with a spren. And she had the blade long before she ended up bonding with the spren. And she doesn't have to wait 10 heartbeats to use the blade? To summon the blade?
She says that it doesn't have to be 10 heartbeats for me, and then immediately goes, no, it does have to be 10 heartbeats. Of course it has to be 10 heartbeats.
Yeah, saying, I think she is lying.
She tends to repress knowledge of things that she doesn't want to think about, doesn't she?
Yeah, which means it doesn't have to be 10 heartbeats for her, but she doesn't want to think about the fact that she could be special.
Most of your Shalon questions will be answered by the end of this book, but there will be more. There's still one last piece of the mystery I'm waiting on.
Oh.
And I think I have it figured out. The prologue of Stormlight 5 gave a major hint as to what it is, and it has recontextualized a shit ton of lines in her flashback chapter so far, to the point where every time I'm taking notes on her flashback chapter in this book, I'm like, oh, okay, that line is interesting now with this other thought in my head. Which is good.
Why?
Because... I can't. But it's good because these are some of my least favorite flashbacks. My first time through, my least favorite are the book 4 flashbacks, but these were my second least favorite, and they have become better knowing the full scale, or not the full scale, but more of the scale of what Shallan's whole deal is. So I'm excited to be able to read them after I do know the full scale. Next week, to give you a little teaser, what's a good teaser for next week? Does next week have a, next week has a, we're going to learn an additional detail about events in Kaladin's backstory, that we did not already know. A scene that we saw last book is going to be recontextualized next week.
Oh.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes. And it is one of my favorite moments in this book.
Recontextualized how?
It is one of the flashbacks, one of the Kaladin flashbacks from last book is going to... you're going to look at it a lot differently after next week.
Huh.
So yes, that is our episode. Right now for me, you guys can just follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. Everything that I do is in my bio there. I just tweet about it or whatever. We have a Discord server. You can join that. The link to join that is in the episode description and also on our Twitter page. You guys follow us on Twitter, which is at SpeakStormlight. You guys can email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. And our cover art was made by our good friend Alex. That's at ALX_BEEGBOI at ALX_BigBoy. And there's also a link to that in the episode description. Thank you guys so much. Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.